Welcome back to the Already Friends podcast. This is Allison and this is
Faith.
Faith is back for part two of her little mini series. Last week, we got to know her on a personal level, how she moved from California to the Netherlands, then to Australia, back to the Netherlands. And we are going to speak to the highs and lows of what it is like to have a small business, because from the outside, I think it can all seem really shiny and really fun. And it is, but it is not without hardships and some both personal battles, what it's like having a customer-facing business.
Exactly.
We will get into all things about Faith's shop. It is called Revive. And the reason we're doing the episode now is because you just celebrated 1 year officially once this episode goes live.
Correct. I'm so excited.
Do a little catch-up, share our peaks of the week, and then we will get into today's topic at hand. How was your week?
My week is from Wednesday to Sunday, my working week. So very busy, very sunny here in the Netherlands. So sales were good. People love to spend when they're happy. And now the weekend begins. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it to yoga because I had too many things on the to-do list. But I did have a few one-on-one catch-up dinners with some former colleagues this week. It's just nice catching up with people. You don't see that frequently. And then just the evening strolls. It doesn't get dark here until about 10, 11 p.m. So me and the dog just had some really slow walks around the canals and then in bed by 10 because that's the age we're at. And yeah, I'm not a complicated person. That is my simple life this week.
I'm flabbergasted that the sun is setting at 10, 11 p.m. I did not know that. Is that
summertime?
Only in the spring?
Yeah, spring, summertime. So at peak, it will be 11 p.m. But till like 10, 15, 10, 20, the sun is still up.
What time is it rising?
When I wake up at like 7 for the dog, the sun is up. So
in my head, I think of the Netherlands like being equal with Nebraska, like geography wise. I just feel like the middle of the United States translates like to Europe. And I forget how much higher Europe is.
Yeah, it's long, long summer days, which bless because it's long winter night.
So then on the flip side, when it is the winter, it's getting dark at like what, 5?
4:35.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, that's so
early. Miserable.
So all of you, the customers, the city, everyone is fully embracing the opportunity to be outside, enjoy the sunshine while it lasts.
Exactly. I will say that if it's too good, no one comes inside to shop. But there's like usually a 2-day threshold where they're like, oh, we had the sun for 2 days. Let's go back to our regular scheduled lives.
Actually, that's so similar to here. The first really nice days of spring, those are going to be really bad sales days because everyone's like, finally, like, let's go for a hike. Let's go to the farmer's market. And they get it out of their system and then they come back. And rainy days, I feel like can go either way. Either everyone's like, yes, let's definitely go shop because what else are we going to do? Or they're like, I'm going to lay in bed and it'll be like a ghost town.
Literal same. Same here.
So unpredictable.
I know.
And then with the dinners with your friends, any notable happenings with that?
One of the friends was from the Athlete's Foot formerly, and she now works at the head office of Adidas. So it's always interesting to hear the corporate comings and goings of Adidas. But we hung out on a terrace, like a rooftop terrace. They dock us on the top of this parking garage and overlooks the entire city. So beautiful. I would just say the highlight of that evening was just the view and the company.
And for anyone that didn't listen last week, where are you located?
I'm located in Haarlem, the Netherlands.
And where is that in relation to Amsterdam?
That is either a 15-minute train ride or a 19-minute train ride. It depends on which train you catch.
And it's west of the city, right?
Yeah, west.
Closer to the coast. Yes, when I visited the Netherlands last fall, I think it was probably my 5th time there. And somehow I had never made it to the ocean. I don't know what is wrong with me. Thank God for you and David. Her husband, David, quite likes to go to the beach, right?
Yeah, he's a surfer, a kite surfer more specifically. But the proximity to the beach is also just 15 minutes drive.
That like blew my mind because I don't know about you guys listening, but when I think of Amsterdam, like I don't think of it being near the ocean. Like you think of like Barcelona, it's like, okay, ocean nearby, a lot of places in Greece, the ocean's there. But like when I think of Amsterdam, I just think of like the city and the canals. And I, you know, on a fundamental level, I get that the water had to get to the canals, but I had never thought it through. And of course, like the Dutch trading companies and makes it really a cool dynamic because you can either go 15 minutes east, go into Amsterdam, have the city life, or 15 more minutes west. And am I going to butcher it? Zandvoort?
Zandvoort. Zand means like sand. I don't know what vort means, but sand.
It's a cute little town.
Yeah, it's not very big. It's a beach town.
Oh, Ziggy in the back.
Oh, you hear her? Oh, yeah, sorry. One second. Hi. Someone rang the doorbell.
Yeah, so I did spend one day in Zandvoort when I was there, and I wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for you and David. So thank you for being the locals, giving me the real inside scoop.
I think Zandvoort is just up your alley. And I will say all the friends that visit me from LA and San Diego, they have no perception of beach life in the Netherlands, the same as you mentioned, and they are so pleasantly surprised. Like the beaches rival San Diego. It's ridiculous.
And the culture of those spots was also pleasantly surprising. I went to a few different beach clubs. That's what you would call them. Yeah. And was like, wait, this is a whole vibe. It's like a Wednesday and it's kind of busy and people are like out here having a great time.
No, it's serious business. They book out days in advance and you just plan it around the weather, but you can't walk. There's barely any walk-up space.
Okay. Good for people to know. Plan ahead for the prime beach spots. And then a quick catch up from me. I've also had quite a social life the last week as well. Being gone for the month of April, of course, I had to, you know, re-catch up with all my people. And when there's only 7 days in a week and I've got 3 siblings, 2 parents, a stepmom, and it was Mother's Day last week, friends, been in Omaha for 20 some years, the math does not math. Even if I go do something every night with a person, I'm like, there's more people than there are days of the week. And I love it. It's just a lot to keep up with for sure. And I'm feeling a bit tired from that now, finally. I hit a wall yesterday and I was like, okay, I need one night, no plans. So I got takeout and ate it in bed and watched YouTube videos and it felt so good.
Good for you, babe.
Thank you. I needed that. And now I feel a little bit more rejuvenated this morning. Well, backing up a little bit, on Saturday night, my friends that own like a men's boutique, for lack of a better word, sometimes they throw parties there. I think I've talked about it on here before. It's about once a month. I had no plans of going out Saturday night. I was like, I had to work the shop Saturday. And then I went to dinner at my friend's house. And then my other friend calls me. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm at so-and-so's. He's like, all right, I'm coming over. And then all of a sudden we end up on a patio. And then all of a sudden we're at the party. And I'm like, this is just the most typical thing of my life where I'm like, I run into these people. And then all of a sudden I'm here and I'm here and here. And then I'm getting home at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It's just, once I'm in the moment, I love chatting and having fun, but I need to work on my boundaries of just like not going from the start because I know once I'm out, I'm not coming home.
Word.
Hence why last night I was like, takeout in bed. I'm not even going to give myself the opportunity to run into anyone along the way. I am parked. And then this morning, I made a new friend. Actually, this makes me think life is a simulation. So last week, I was in this neighborhood called Dundee, walking Peaches along, and this guy, I'm passing him on the street, and he's like, oh my gosh, cute dog. We talked a little bit, and we're like, okay, bye. Like, have a nice life, you know, as
never gonna see you again, normally. Type of vibe.
Yes. Yeah. And then this morning I'm at the coffee shop across the street and he walks in and he's like putting Peaches and we look at each other and we're like, wait, were you the person I met on the street last week? And we both were like, yeah, okay, that is wild. And then we're like, you know what? I'm like, sit down at the table. We're in it now. So we worked at the coffee shop together all morning for the last like 4 hours. And he owns like an art gallery here. And we both had so much to like share. And yeah, we're taking our dogs to the dog park tomorrow night.
Okay, cute.
And it was really fun and unexpected. He moved here from New York 5 years ago. And we were talking about how even on a world scale, there's like a weird fetish for like Nebraskans or like the middle of the United States in this like people trying to be ironic way. It's like Nebraska doesn't have as bad of PR as Texas. So it's like more wholesome cowboy culture. Even Off-White, they did the Nebraska merch. Mm-hmm. Like what is with people's interest in Nebraska? I don't get it, but it's not like they actually want to move here or like it. It's like they want the idea of it. Mm. Because when I travel and I tell people I'm from Nebraska, they start calling me Nebraska as if it's my name and are like so intrigued. They're like, I've never met someone from Nebraska. What's it like? Like they're enamored by that I could be like a healthy contributing person and be from like the absolute middle of nowhere.
I have the same feeling as an American though. So for Nebraskans.
A curiosity?
Yeah.
As a Californian, explain your thoughts. Because I can't weigh in. I don't know. I'm from
here.
Well,
I will say LA is a melting pot. So I think I've met one or two Nebraskans. But I couldn't have pointed it out on a map. And honestly, I'm just the type of person to treat everyone like, okay. You're from Nebraska. Cute. I think Texas is the only one that it evokes like a negative feel. So as long as there's no negative, yeah, it's like a soft cowboy. That describes it perfectly.
Okay, peak of the week.
Yes, I've been excited to share my peak of the week. It's very simple, but my husband was in the south of France with his work all week. So I actually ordered takeout every day because I don't cook. My husband cooks. And I was very excited for him to get home last night. That's my peak of the week. My husband coming home. And it's nice to miss your significant other. And then it's nice when they come back, even if it's for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, you can start to appreciate how much you do like to have their presence around.
Exactly.
In the midst of this being Revive's 1 year and like you having a lot to do, was it nice to have
Absolutely.
Some evenings by yourself?
I'm so happy when he leaves. That sounds so mean. But it means I don't have to account for another person. I can just get the job done, head down in the sand, like doing the things that need to be done. Yeah.
Oh my God. We have to talk about the cooking thing really fast because I'm also not the chef. And one night when I was staying at Faith's house last fall, you and I were trying to make what do you call those meal delivery things?
Hello
what is yours?
Chef or Green Chef or HelloFresh.
Yeah, one of those. And Faith and I realized we have very different approaches to these meal kit dinners. She's like following everything line by line perfectly. And I'm just skipping over the steps. I'm like, just throw it all in a bowl. It'll be fine. Like, I'm taking it as like a general guideline. And she's like, what are you doing?
No, I have no intuition when it comes to cooking. Baking's a different vibe, but cooking, it's like line for line or die.
Well, moral of the story, neither of us belong in the kitchen at this point in our lives.
No. No plan for getting better. It just does not bring me joy. I'm good at other things.
Well, I'm glad David's back in the kitchen, back with you, helping with Zig.
Thank you. But what about you? Your peak of the week.
I had so many peaks last week. And now, this week, everything was like 70% good. Like,
moderately.
There was not a lot of highs, not a lot of valleys. It was just a pretty typical week. Okay, actually, I told you guys I'm ending my lease. Technically, it gets done July 31st, but I would love to be out of here June 30th so that like in July, someone else can have it. Because also, July is such a good month. Like for someone to take it over, moving in the summer, the weather's good. Depending on what someone wants to do with it, I feel like they would want to capitalize on being able to get in there as soon as possible. And I had a few Airbnb guests on the calendar in July. And this is kind of complicated to explain, but if you're an Airbnb host, you basically can't cancel under any circumstance because Airbnb doesn't want a reputation of hosts being able to cancel on their guests because then people would not want to use Airbnb if, you know, you plan this trip because you want to stay at this cool Airbnb and all of a sudden they just cancel. Like that would be so frustrating. And I feel like Airbnb has already had to overcome a lot of customer perception issues. Mm. So yeah, hosts cannot cancel. And sent everyone this long message with the audio of what the bar below me sounds like. You will not have a pleasant experience, which they won't. But thank God, every guest on my calendar for the month of July all canceled.
Woo!
So I could be A, shooting myself in the foot if I can't get out of my lease. Now I literally was watching people cancel and it was like $800 booking canceled, $500 booking canceled. I've never been so happy to just lose money, but
small win.
The freedom. Yes. I'm already like the light at the end of the tunnel is getting closer and closer and closer.
Nice.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you guys, if you had to spend one night here with that music, you would be like, I don't know how she's like a functioning person. It's horrid. But on a more positive note, we'll share some of the listeners' peaks of the week. Meredith said, going to Hawaii this week for the first time. That sounds absolutely lovely right now. I could use some ocean sand and palm trees.
Agreed. Enjoy Hawaii so much. Beautiful, beautiful island. From Mary Kate, my sisters and I surprised my mom for Mother's Day, and she was so surprised and happy. Aw, so wholesome and cute.
I hope everyone who is a mom had a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. And Corey said, worked in the garden and saw the northern lights. I am so embarrassed. I somehow missed that that was a thing and I didn't see them.
Oh my gosh. It was all up in my family group chat and everyone went outside to see them. And apparently you could only see them through your camera lens. So it wasn't that strong here, but good for you.
Were you at least able to see it through someone's camera lens, or you didn't even go look at all?
No, I was the same as you. Like, it was not on my radar. Too many things on the to-do list.
Yeah. And I feel like I always find out about these natural phenomenons after. I don't know if I'm like not in the right social circles or what. Because remember how the eclipse was a couple weeks ago?
I had no clue.
Joke. I'm okay. It got, well, I guess maybe it wasn't everywhere, but in Nebraska and Missouri or something, it was like darkness for a little while. And I'm walking to the bank and I was like, what the fuck? It is so dark out right now. And I was like looking and I'm like, maybe there was a fire like making it hazy. Mm. And I was like, and then I was like rubbing my eyes and I was like, am I just like tired? Mm. And I had no idea. And I go into the bank and the bankers are like, oh my God, the eclipse is happening. And I was like, oh, that's why it's like literally dark out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon right now. So yeah, a little slow on the uptake.
Yeah, it's okay. We're human.
Again, good at other things.
Exact. From China, covered my first music festival for work. Congratulations, China. I bet that feels exciting and relieving all at the same time.
I, in another life, could see you doing something with music festivals.
Yeah, absolutely would have loved to, but it was one of those decisions where do I want to work in something I love so much that it to the point that it ruins it, or I can't enjoy it personally.
No, that's so valid. Offline, Faith and I were talking about how you go through this weird dynamic with fashion. Like, as a store owner, you would think that I would just be so obsessed with getting ready every day. And when I first opened my shop, I was like, this is so fun. And then all of a sudden, when you're around it all the time, I like really lost a passion for actually like putting my own outfits together and going shopping. Once I hit the 3-year mark, I was like, I'm so ugly. I have no fashion sense anymore. Like, what happened? I have 10 articles of clothing. I sold my entire wardrobe because it just becomes inventory. And now I'm trying to get re-inspired and actually go shopping again because I had to have a good look at myself and be like, girl, we can do better.
Yes, it's exactly that. Like, all your energy goes to the client and the store. Definitely guilty of selling my wardrobe, but all I think it's done is make me rethink what is worth spending my money on as I move forward. But to your point, like, getting ready is not my favorite task. It is a task indeed.
What types of fashion things do you like to spend money on?
Investment pieces. I have a rule where you need to picture wearing it 3 different ways and then it's worth the money. And then I like to buy things that are more high value because they hold value. I could probably resell it for the same price.
I love that you said the 3-way thing because I literally said that on here a couple of months ago. Like, I will tell customers if they're like on the fence about something and I'm like, 3 ways, how are you going to wear it? And if you can't come up with like those 3 either occasions or styling ways, if you're hesitant now, you're going to be hesitant when you're like stressed out in the morning trying to put it on.
Exactly. And then it would break your heart even more to see it sitting in your closet untouched.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's take it back to the top. So, how we connected quick spark notes. After a few days in Amsterdam, I was like, I need a little bit of a break. And I had been to Harlem a couple times and I just knew it was peaceful to go and stay over there. The accommodation's a little cheaper. So I'm over in Harlem walking around. It was a Friday and there was a farmer's market right around the corner from you. And so I went over there, got a little coffee and fully stumbled upon your shop. Like, I can't believe, I'm sure I would have eventually looked it up, but I kind of love that I just walked past and I was like, that looks cute. I'm going inside. And we went in and I talked to everyone. So I probably just started chatting your ear off.
No, I saw you taking photos of my community board and I was like, do you recognize someone? And you're like, no, I have a similar board in my store.
Did I say it like that?
No, it was like, you were so bubbly and happy. Like that's how I first named it. It was like, yeah.
I was sending it in the group chat and I was like, guys, I found like the Netherlands version like of our shop and it's so cool. And I'm like feeling at home right now. And I saw they're literally right here. I'll do a show and tell if we post this. But remember these Chloe boots?
Yeah.
I love them. They're what caught my eye. So
good investment.
These boots are the reason for our friendship because I saw them through the window. And yeah, then we started chatting and then fast forward, here we are. And I think we just bonded over having similar business concepts. And there's some things that I do that you were like, okay, that's an interesting way to do it. And there's some things that you do that I was like, okay, I like how you're doing it better. And then it was kind of like resource sharing. And when you're an entrepreneur, it can feel really lonely. And I would say that's like one of the biggest downsides of entrepreneurship is you don't have coworkers. Like when, of course, maybe if your small business hires people, but you as the single owner are the only person. And so let's say if you're at a corporate office and you have all of these other people and you're working towards a common issue, you guys can bond and have similar struggles in your day to day. But when you're just as an entrepreneur on an island, it's really easy to just be like in your head about stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, you're having conversations with yourself on decisions you need to make by end of day. Like, yeah, it is very, it's a lonely journey.
So with Revive, it's been 1 year. Before you opened, how did you start concepting it? Did you know that you wanted to do secondhand vintage? What even got you curious in that industry to start with?
Pretty early on. So I started at Forever 21 at 18 and I did 4 years there. I did one store visual merchandising. And then when I transferred universities to back to LA to get my bachelor's of fashion merchandising, I transferred Forever 21 as well. So I started working in the LA Forever 21 on the Hollywood Boulevard and doing very similar things there. But in order to finish my degree, I had to quit Forever 21 and just concentrate on passing the bachelor's, which led to the study abroad opportunity because I didn't have the job. And then, as you know, from if you listened to the last podcast, David and I moved to Australia. And because I had the Forever 21 VM job, I got hired at Cotton On Group head office. I don't know if you're familiar with Cotton On. It's not in Europe. So when I explain it to people, they're like, what? And I was like, it's like H&M. It's a pretty big deal. Actually, they have 7 brands and I worked for the main brand in the head office and I was a VM specialist for them. But I would call them middle fashion because Forever 21 has 12 seasons, Cotton On has 4 seasons. So that was a little bit slower.
Wait. We need to do an educational moment. Okay, because we've got fast fashion, medium fashion, slow fashion. Please explain further.
So fast fashion is just when you're pumping out new items as quick as possible and there's 12 months in a year. So when I say 12 season, it's basically following the month calendar. The medium fashion companies follow maybe a quarterly seasonality and slow fashion is probably half yearly.
Shein, don't they have 52 seasons like once a week?
Oh my goodness. So there's extra fast fashion.
Yeah, like we had Forever 21 set the line of the fastest fashion and Shein was like, we can take it further. We can go faster. And you're very passionate about circular fashion. So could you explain what that is and why you're passionate about it?
Yeah, so my career was in full price businesses. And what that means is it's firsthand product. So it's new product created every season. And those companies are huge and they have upwards of around 3,000 people in a head office making this thing happen. And I was looking around and I was like, you know what? We don't really save lives. What can I do that like betters the planet? I'm a feminist and a humanitarian. And with that comes intersectionality and saving the earth, and environmentalism is also included in there. So anything that I do in my life, I just want to leave the earth better. So circular fashion is an easy one because the secondhand world is booming right now. And I was like, everything's been made. What can I do to ensure the things that we're not wearing can have a home and somebody else can find that and basically circulate? 10 years total. So I count Forever 21 as 4, Cotton On as 3. I did, actually, so it's more. I did also 3 at the Athlete's Foot and 2 at Calvin Klein head office.
After seeing so many sides in the fashion industry, you're just like, they're pumping out too much. And I still want to work in fashion, but don't want to contribute in that way.
So pre-COVID, so my first job in the Netherlands was at the Athlete's Foot. And it was just visual merchandising manager opening up stores in Europe. And I was happy to just continue to do what I was always doing in my career, which was VM specific. But this was the first time I had a close connection with the sustainability team and the store development team, and kind of seeing everything they work on and all the laws that they have to follow. And I was just more and more curious about all the requirements in the EU for sustainable communication, because sustainable communication is a big thing, but it's very like greenwashing's a huge no-no. Like there's so many lawsuits in Europe. And I was like, so how do we communicate about this product or A, B, and C, like how can we make something more sustainable in a full price environment? And then during COVID, all the jobs started changing. We brought in titles and I got offered like a sustainability management because there was no one in our team doing it. We were only a team of 10 people. And I was like, yes, please. Like, I'm happy to learn. If I can get paid to learn, let's do it. And it was just finding little wins. And then when I moved to Calvin Klein, I used that as a big talking point about like why I should be hired. Basically, I'm hugely into sustainability. How do we communicate it to the customer? Because during COVID, there was a huge, like a 300% growth of sustainable purchasing of products. And you could see all the trends moving towards greener, greener, greener. And I was like, okay, then let's utilize the people care. Let's give the people what they want. And a company like Calvin Klein, they have a whole department dedicated to sustainability because it's absolutely necessary. So I quickly connected with them. I was listening to what they were doing. They had an internal program. Actually, for those of you who don't know, PVH is the like mother company of Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger. But Tommy Hilfiger's head office, global head office, is in the Netherlands. So this is some hierarchy junk, but I was talking to the Tommy Hilfiger sustainable team and Calvin Klein hadn't been developed yet. So it was, how do I take those learnings and kind of implement it in the retail realm? So I kind of got added that job description to my job description was retail experience for Calvin Klein Europe and then sustainability.
Okay, fascinating. Tell us some things that you learned from that entire experience.
Well, so because PVH is such a big company, they even have a whole team dedicated to consumer insight. They're constantly talking to consumers and they pump out information to the entire company almost every month. They're going in the market. They're asking customers direct questions. They also have regular subscription to like fashion informational pages like WGSM, Business of Fashion. They also have connections with innovation, and we had an innovation department. So innovation was working on digital collections because in such a large company, we have a wholesale department. So when you sell wholesale, all the buyers from like, say, JCPenney's or Nordstrom's need to buy collections from our brands, but they need the physical samples. So if people can't travel, you have to send it. Samples is the number one waste in the industry. So the innovation team was building extremely realistic digital collection to the point where you can touch like a digital rendition and feel the texture of a material.
How does that work?
I don't know. Like when I got there, they started saying that they were experimenting with that. And I was like on an iPad, like just the screen morph. I'm like, how does this all work? But, you know, innovation was doing things. They were testing programs where they would do the Tommy for Life program, where they would buy back previously loved Tommy clothing and rework it. If it wasn't good enough to resell, they would rework it into a reworked design. So they were doing that internally.
At Great Wolf Lodge, there's adventure for the whole family. You and your pack can splash away in the indoor water park where it's always 84 degrees. There's a massive wave pool, a lazy river, and tons of water slides for your pack to enjoy together. And the fun doesn't stop there. Get ready to explore and play at adventure-packed attractions from Magi Quest, a live-action game that takes place throughout the lodge to the Northern Lights Arcade. There's also a bunch of great dining options and complimentary daily events like nightly dance parties, all under one roof. And the best part? With 22 lodges across the country, you're always only a short drive away from adventure. So bring your pack together at a lodge near you. Book your stay today at greatwolf.com and strengthen the pack.
I've seen so many new retailers adopting that now. Like Patagonia, you can buy their secondhand stuff. So many of those big brands, I'm sure you can weigh in a much more proper way, but they saw consumers wanting secondhand. They're like, how can we capitalize on the industry changing?
Exactly. Literally look at it as a capitalization. They're not necessarily doing it out of the goodness of their heart, but they saw a business opportunity to get a second margin off of previously sold clothes because they basically buy back the clothes for less than 10% of the original value. And then they resell it at half of the value. So they're controlling their brand perception. They're controlling the supply chain and they are doing something good for the environment. So it's not all like, yeah, business, whatever, but yes, it's very profitable. These corporations to figure out a way to support their customers with finding their own brands and as secondhand and buying them.
So now leading that into Revive.
I had been in corporate for almost, I guess, over 10 years now. And I was just tired of working for other people. Not that I don't love my old team. They were some of the best people and colleagues I've had. And like you said, entrepreneurship can be pretty lonely. So I left a group of colleagues or a team of 100 people in the retail department to be my lonesome self. I was tired of meeting to meeting and not seeing the actual change because it so often in corporations, it can become hierarchical and you have to run it up the food chain to get approvals or the first thing to get cut might be a sustainable mission because it's not profitable. And that's just the reality of the world. And I saw an opportunity within the company. There was a reorg and I was like, this is the perfect time for me to exit. All the stars aligned. I had previously thought about opening my own store. I was like, what's the most simplest life? Four walls where you can manage the everything in it, theoretically, where it's supposed to be a one person's job, but it's not. It's a many person's job. And yeah, I was ready for change and Revive came. It was a lot of crossover and a lot of support from my former manager and mentor. It all the stars aligned and I was able to actually still work at Calvin Klein for 2 days of the week and have Revive for the other 5 days a week. So in the beginning, I was hustling.
I don't know how you did that. Knowing the startup of a small business, like, were you okay?
No, I was not okay. And I, you know, what I chalk that up to is American mentality of hustle culture. I just want these people to know that, you know, everyone thinks it's swim or sink, but it's okay to float. In the beginning, you do have to hustle. You do have to make some sacrifices to get yourself to a point where like you're comfortable and it is flowing. Like everything's new in the beginning and you're doing things, you're taking chances, you're pivoting. But once you get to a certain point, you can breathe. I had hard lines. I leave at 6. I leave when that door shuts. And I remember you saying, oh, you stay hours later. And I was like, no, that's always been my line. I'm open 28 hours a week. The customer can come to me in those 28 hours a week. Granted, I do work the other 40 to 80 hours at home, but the physical hours where I deal with the customer is, 28 hours.
No, I was literally shocked because I was at your apartment and you said like the shop closes at 6, like I'll be home at 6:30. And it was like 6:27 and the doorbell rang. And I was like, she actually like locks the door and actually walks home at that point in time. And when you have your own business, I'm sure people even know that who work at home, who have their own thing, even if it's e-commerce, even if you're a coach or a consultant, when you make your own hours, having the discipline to stop working, it takes so much.
It really does. And I will say I haven't mastered it yet. I think I'm still in the point where I'm trying to reach like a maximum thriving profitability. My goal is not capitalism. I don't want to exponentially grow. I want to get to a point where I can have the most amount of free time and least amount of headache with the least amount of physical time in the store. So yeah, it is finding that balance.
Because at the end of the day, if you as a business owner are not okay and thriving, the business is not going to either. And that was a lesson that I had to learn that I've talked about a lot on here, that unless you have a team under you that can keep it going, if you are very hands-on with your business and then you get sick mentally or physically, it's going to show in the business.
Absolutely. I get like migraines quite frequently and I would have to go to work because it's just the reality. Like they depend on you. Those doors need to be open. I can't just be like closed for the day.
No. And then that's bad PR if you make an Instagram story. It's like, hey, closed all of a sudden. If someone was planning, say, a day trip from Amsterdam to Harlem to hit a few spots, and that was like their one day they could do that, they would be hugely bummed if they couldn't come in that day.
Yeah.
So then you power through.
Exactly. And don't even get me started on the potential negative Google review.
Reviews when as a small business owner are like terrifying.
Yes.
Then the fact that people can just say anything, they don't even actually have, like, they should have to prove that they went in there even. On Airbnb, no one can just go up and write about a listing that they didn't actually stay at. It's so wild that with Google reviews, someone on the other side of the world could just write you a 1-star Google review if they just didn't like you.
Actually, it's insane. Recently, Google pushed review all the places you visited and it would geo push like everywhere your phone had been. My 1-star review is this 15-year-old kid on his way to a concert stopped by my store and was shocked by my prices because he doesn't understand secondhand designer.
Yeah. And then out of context, when people just see 1-star, they're not like, oh, I bet it was a 15-year-old kid walking by.
I do like that they have given you the option to reply. So you just need to be extremely professional about your reply. And I think anyone that would read my 1-star review would see that maybe we should be able to rate customers.
In return. Yeah. Well, tying that together, the mental health, the overworking, now that it's been a year, do you feel like you've made the right choice? Like, do you feel more passion for what you do with work day to day?
I would say that I've made the right decision. And I think it needs more time to have I absolutely made the right decision. As of now, my commute is 3-minute bicycle ride. I start at noon. I close at 6. I'm open 28 hours a week. And I choose every item that goes in my store. I put everything on my social media. I make every single decision. While that could sound daunting, that a beautiful thing. I don't have to run it up a hierarchy. I don't have to get a budget approved. I'm not in back-to-back meetings for an 8-hour shift. I don't have to commute 30 minutes here and there. I would say all in all, even if I make less money than what I made at Calvin or any of the other jobs, the benefits greatly outweigh all of that other stuff. Also, money isn't the only what's the word?
Measure of happiness?
Yes, exactly.
So what would you say some of the biggest perks are of the freedom of entrepreneurship?
would say it's setting your own schedule. I mean, depending on what, what business or industry you're in. I mean, retail, you kind of have to look at the stores around you and decide what's the best. I literally text one of my colleagues. I call my colleagues, anyone in Harlem that owns a secondhand vintage store, I text them and I'm like, are you open on this holiday? Like, last week there was two holidays. It's like, should I be closed? She's like, no, just take an hour off the day. I think it's just a shorter day. Or like for King's Day, the King's birthday, which is like our 4th of July, which was April 27th. Absolutely under no circumstances should you be open. That is a party day. No one is shopping. You get to choose your brand. You get to choose your energy. Like, it's just, yeah, all the things that you can't do when you work for someone else.
With Revive, what type of brand did you want to put out into the world?
Well, working so long in corporate, everything starts with a strategy. So I spent quite a lot of time building the strategy, whether that be like demographic, target market, or like product strategy, social media strategy. I just wanted something that included everyone. And that kind of sounds like my tagline is secondhand fashion for everybody. And I highlight body because I also want to be body inclusive. And I also like make really conscious decisions never to mention gender. So I never say made for her, for him. It's like never gender is mentioned. So I wanted a brand that was all inclusive without throwing it up in your face. When I say for everybody, it's so nice that I was able to create a space that has product from Zara to Versace, but also product in terms of my youngest customer has been an 8-year-old and my oldest an 80-year-old. And it's just so lovely to see an entire community, not just age specific, gender specific, or ethnicity, race, religion. Yeah, it truly is a place for everybody.
And that's obviously something you're very passionate about on a personal level. And you've been able to weave that ethos into your business in such a genuine way.
Exactly. That is my ultimate mission and vision for Revive. And I wanted a space where all product from Adidas to Prada could live in the same room. Also, I did want to make sure that I did have product for men because so many of the secondhand stores only focus on women. And because they are run by women, it is slightly easier to wrap your head around that. But I've been in the industry so long, I can do both. I will say I am less passionate about it. But I knew that it had to include men for intensive purposes. So yeah.
Yeah, and the listeners can't see you, but you're like air quoting.
Yes, exactly.
Like, someone that wants to purchase, because even like I love wearing men's jeans that were made with the intent to go on a man, because I like how much baggier they fit. Yep. And everyone should just get to wear whatever type and thing that they want.
Yes. The number one thing I think men are the most confused when they walk in my store. I wouldn't say my store's feminine, but it's merchandised in a color coordination way. So when men come in, they're like, Elaine Damas plating, which means only women's clothing. And I'm like, no, it's just merchandise by color. If you find something you like and it fits you, it was made for you.
I obviously like the visual merchandising. Do you like styling other people?
Look, styling is extremely personal. I think me and you talked about this, like when we're being sales associates, it's like how to sell. You never sell to people. You talk to them. And you pull information about what makes them comfortable, because at the end of the day, they're only going to buy things that make them comfortable and they see themselves wearing. So styling is so personal that all I end up saying is, are you comfortable? Can you see yourself wearing it this way to this event? Like, oh, you're saying it's too tight there? Then you're probably not going to wear it. Like, how does it feel? Have a seat. Can you breathe in it? Like, it's always about the comfort level. And I do like supporting people and helping them get to their yes or no answer. But sometimes it's overwhelming because I'm not here to like dictate. I can just say, this is on trend. It would look good this way. But if they try it and they don't like it, then it's not a sale.
Those are really good questions for people to ask themselves, like when they're out shopping, whether it's new or secondhand, how does this fit me? Yeah, can I sit down? Are there three places to wear this? Does this color make me feel confident?
100%.
What advice do you have for someone who struggles to find like what they like? Because I hear that a lot as feedback for the industry. It's just like, I don't have the eye. How do you start developing an eye when there's, I don't want to say it's more chaotic shopping secondhand, but it kind of is. I think you and I have tried to make it less chaotic by making it aesthetic, but it's not as forward as going into a new store where it's on the mannequin and it's like paired shirt, bottom, accessories on this table. Here you go.
I will say I do try to market style as my brand. I consistently post like a weekly edit where I update the mannequins and I try to sell a whole look. And I almost exclusively use Pinterest to back up that weekly edit. So I will try to find an image and then mimic that key look on the mannequins. So selling style is super important so that they don't just see a room of things. They see outfits, potential outfits. I will say our stores are quite different. I don't see your store as having a lot of brand names. I lean heavily on brand perception because I have quite a lot of designer brands like Loewe, Gucci, Prada. I also do sell Zara. So I think that is where we kind of differ. I do more lean on the brands and their perception of the time. And I do get a lot of brand lovers who come to my store for a specific brand. So they don't necessarily need my help. I will say anytime you go to a secondhand store, I would never go there on a mission. It's going there to browse and be inspired. But to your point, like if they don't have the eye, I mean, then just look at your closet or even build a Pinterest board and be like, what am I missing? Is there something in this room that can fill that gap type of vibes?
That's interesting that you say not having a mission, because I have given the advice on here to do the opposite, where I think secondhand can be overwhelming. Like there's, if you don't have some trajectory of what you want, it can be overwhelming. So I guess it can be both. If you're going in for inspiration, you can certainly get inspired and see a lot of cool pieces. But usually I feel like I kind of have a running list of things on my wish list. Like right now I have black cowboy boots and I have like a beige cowboy boot and I really need a brown pair of cowboy boots. And then I have a really good pair of long jorts, like jean shorts, but my a little bit shorter ones, I blew out the pocket. So I'm like, I have another short pair kind of on my list.
Yeah, I feel like your store feeds that like ethos. I think my store is very, like I said, brand driven. I got known on TikTok for selling Loewe t-shirts and people were coming all over the Netherlands for a Loewe t-shirt. I think it was very brand hypey, which can lean into a little bit faster fashion because it is following a trend, but they are investment pieces and they will hold their value. So when the hype is over, they can resell it and somebody else will get a chance to wear it. And I think at least with my experience with those, even t-shirts, they were quite good t-shirts. This isn't like a thin Forever 21 t-shirt that you can wash three times and throw away. I'm spending $250. But it will last. And I know those people are going to take care of those shirts.
Zooming out though, for people not in the Netherlands and not in Nebraska, what advice do you have for them to get more excited about secondhand? Because some, you know, there's the stereotypes to get past that it's like dirty or it's too hard to find what they want. How are you, as someone with a background in like strategy and communication, how could you convey to our listeners that it's fun and it's cool to be a part of?
I would look, like, number one answer is I would look for the hometown heroes like me and you, people that invest time in curating an experience and not just throw up endless amount of options for the dollar. Like, I do have a capacity limit. I have a couch in my store. I have lots of space to breathe. Like, I have like minimum 3 feet separation between racks so that multiple people could be standing there and looking. So I think it takes time to do your research up front of what's worth investing time in terms of the type of store. Do not, I mean, if you're overwhelmed and it smells, definitely don't go, and you think everything smells, is don't go to Salvation Army, because that will overwhelm you even more. It's find the stores like yours, Allison, that like the people took care and effort and time to curate it and support you there.
Hometown heroes. I think that could be applied to a lot of industries, like the coffee shop that's trying harder to have good ingredients, the little bodega on the corner that's bringing in brands of groceries that you can't find at the big supermarket, the bank that actually cares to know the customers' names.
Exactly. The buy local ethos should through and through be top of mind. And not to say, I also want to caveat that with, we're all human. Like, you can also buy firsthand and you can one day like pivot. Like, you don't need to be 100% always something, but buying local is an easy first step to supporting the local community and to doing something positive that way. And then, yeah, getting into the secondhand realm with hometown heroes like Allison and I.
Definitely a good point of how can you make it sustainable in the long run? Because the past few years, like owning a secondhand shop, I felt this like pressure to almost be like zero waste and to like travel less and never buy anything new, because I was like, I have to be a good example. And like, if I'm a secondhand shop owner, like I've got to fit this mold. And it really negatively impacted my mental health. And we did an episode last spring about how you as a person do have the right to just like be on earth and like do what you need to do. You have to eat, you have to get your kids across town. And if you're putting so much pressure on yourself to be a good, quote, good sustainable person, but it's making you more unwell, then like you kind of have to evaluate if that's healthy for you in the long run, if you can't maintain doing that. Like, you want to make choices at a pace where they feel good, but you're not so stressed about it, you know?
Exactly. I think that's the definition of sustainability, is like finding the way to sustain your life in a way that is the least impactful on earth and your mental load. And whether that's deciding that you're not eating meat 3 days out of the week, that greatly helps like water waste, or where you decide to go to the secondhand store before you just purchase something online out of convenience. Or if you purchase that thing online because you need that convenience, because you need that extra 2 hours back to take your kids to soccer practice.
Yeah, all a juggling act. And we all are naturally going to gravitate towards some areas of sustainability over others. Like, I don't have a car because it's somewhat possible for me to mostly walk in my neighborhood, take an Uber here or there, or catch a ride. But then I'm definitely still taking flights. And that is a pact that I made with myself that I'm like, they cancel, it's fine. You know, like, so whatever we all can individually sleep with ourselves at night.
Exactly.
Okay, at the beginning, we mentioned entrepreneurship can be lonely. There's highs and lows. First, we'll talk about some of the lows, and then we'll end on a high note. What have been some of the hardest things that you've had to overcome in entrepreneurship, or maybe things that would have been helpful if you knew, or if someone's looking to go down this path? Just like some heads up that they know what they're getting into.
Well, when you, depending on what part of entrepreneurship we opened a physical brick and mortar store. I mean, if you're doing something digitally, I'm sure there's a whole different applicable like challenges. But for a physical space, you have to go through the motions of finding spaces that are available that you can afford in the right location, will take the least amount of effort to refurb in order to get it into a look and feel that is cohesive with your brand. And then for me, put language on top of that and manage it and negotiating in a different language. Helpful note, use ChatGPT for literally everything. My landlord sent me my overview and I just popped it into ChatGPT and I said, help me respond where I could get to this amount of rent and negotiate this term lease. Like, ChatGPT comes in. On top of that, just making sure you like understand the laws, like making sure you're not stepping on any like local toes, whether it's governmental or neighborhood wise, because people around you matter. Like the street that my store is on, like I am the only retail store on my street. The rest are houses and I'm next to a library. So it is very specific. And all the people on the street come to my store and say hi to me and they're happy that I'm there. So that's positive, but make sure that you're on the right side of those people. What else? Yeah, I would say getting really clear, really quick on your mission, vision, and strategy. Start there, because if you're confused, your customer is going to be confused and you're going to start making really bad decisions that are going to make it really hard to be profitable or sustainable quicker. In retail in general, it takes 1 to 2 years to make your investment back. So you're lucky if after the first year you make your money back or you've paid yourself a salary. So it's not for the faint-hearted. Yeah, those are some important lessons to get straight on before you take the jump.
Yeah, on the pay note, if you are not super passionate and love your business and love what you're contributing to the world, those months when you don't get a paycheck, you're not going to be very happy.
No, you're going to be hurting and you're going to be questioning every decision you've ever made leading up to that moment. Sometimes I'm thinking, why did I leave my 9-to-5, regular paid, sick leave, paid time off, pension job for I wonder if I'll have any sales today vibes.
Yeah, definitely takes being your own personal coach each day to be like, it's worth it. We're going to be okay. And if at some point you decide it's not worth it, like that's fine. There's so many jobs out there. And I think people are afraid to start stuff sometimes because they're afraid to actually quit stuff. Mm-hmm. And they feel like maybe failure or wanting to quit it is inevitable at some point. So they're like, why even start? But if you and I were to close our shops, like I don't see that as failure. I see that as like, we did something, we learned a lot. It was an experience. It was an era and time for the next.
Yeah. I feel like that's a great point because it's like reprogramming our minds to like define what failure is. I don't think anything's a failure. It's all lessons learned, pivots. Like nothing's permanent, like even moving abroad, like I can decide tomorrow that I want to move back to America, even owning this house, like I can literally sell it, you know, it's just, yeah, figuring out what works for you. And if you decide in 6 months, 9 years that you want change, then you have the right.
Yeah, I think too often it's easy to feel like you're in too deep with something when like, what does that even mean? You're never in too deep. Like everything is just kind of like a game that's made up. Like there's endless opportunities everywhere. And I think all that's really behind people not taking the leap is just the fear of then say being alone or not having money or it not working out. But like it might not work out how you imagine it is, or it's not going to be how it is right now. But like you said in last week's episode, if you're going to move abroad, you have to let go of exactly how your life was at home. It's not going to be how it was in your previous city, town.
Exactly. You're going to find a way to make a living, to stop being lonely, to build a life, because it's a necessity. Like we thrive on community and human interaction and growth. And I promise you'll make it work.
And all those things you just listed, would you say those have been the highs and the best parts about starting Revive?
Yes, I would absolutely say so. It's just, you know how we say it's lonely and I may have lost my colleagues, but I gained all my customers and I've met some really cool people that I hang out with, clients turned friends, you know, and it is different for me and you because I am an expat here. So I do have a lot of open time and can easily invite someone to a dinner I've already had planned. You find ways to overcome the loneliness by regular hangouts with the customers turned friends. Yeah.
Okay. And now that it's been 1 year, what things do you have planned or that you're looking forward to in the next year of Revive?
Yes. Yeah, so coming up on the 1 year, instead of just throwing another party or doing a vendor collaboration, I decided to use the community members that I've had the pleasure of meeting in the last year and see which ones are extremely creative and maybe sustainable heroes. And I, this week, will announce my Harlem Community Board transition into the Creative Community Board, where I highlight local creatives. I have two creatives in the pipeline. One specifically uses denim and designs laser-like graphic designs and lasers them onto the denim. Really cool, intricate stuff. And then another reworker who takes scraps or dead fabric or current product and upcycles it, has made some really cool vintage silk scarf, turned silk scarves like Celine, Gucci, Burberry, and made them into halter tops for just in time for summer and festival season. So those two reworkers will have small collections featured in the store, and they'll get their name out there to my small and humble community on Instagram and TikTok. And hopefully it'll just be a snowball effect from there. But I also hope to encourage anyone that has maybe not been on my radar or all the new community members, invite them to introduce themselves to me and maybe be the next Revive Harlem creative community feature.
Are these items also going to be available on your website, or are these in-store only?
They will absolutely be available on the website, and I do ship worldwide.
You ship worldwide?
Yes. Everything.
Wow.
Everything can go worldwide.
That's fair, but you see a lot of companies that are just like, no. So,
I mean, the only caveat is you have to pay for shipping.
Yeah. But still, it's really cool that you're making it back to your brand mission, style for everybody, whether you live on your continent or another one, you're making your pieces accessible to the customers that want it.
Exactly.
So speaking of the website, you have inventory in store if people want to come to the Netherlands and shop with you in person, but you do have, what's your website URL?
Reviveharlem.com.
Harlem with two A's.
Correct.
That is the stuff that's currently in your shop that people can see. Exactly. And get a glimpse of like what your offerings are.
It's a limited collection because I just don't have the time. I'm sure you understand. We have one item of everything in the store. So the amount of workload it takes to photograph something, edit, write a description, and upload it, it's probably already sold in the store. So I'm very strategic with the amount of pieces I put online. So I always tell my customers, don't wait for me to upload anything. Stop by the store one time weekly or bi-weekly to see all the new items. Because yeah, that's where you're just going to see all the new gems as quick as possible.
Oh, I commend you immensely for even doing e-commerce secondhand. I don't have the fight in me. I do none.
Yes, it was more like what I learned at Calvin Klein is that a 360 business is actually necessary. Because most of my customers are from the Netherlands, but people like to see things on Instagram and then they're like, link me, I'll purchase it and ship them. So it was an accessibility thing.
And when you say 360, can you further explain that?
Yeah. So what 360 means, a physical store, so a brick and mortar to an e-com to a social media. So you're on every touch point that a potential customer would exist or have like a life on, and you're accessible. You're speaking the same brand language. You're showing the same things. And yeah, it just really drives back to accessibility. If I show something on Instagram, it needs to be purchasable on e-com.
Commend you for it. What else?
I do have two collabs coming in. What month are we? May, June and July. Those are, I would say, regularly scheduled collabs. I do the last 2 weeks of the month. I invite somebody who sells exclusively on Instagram in the Netherlands. That has to be secondhand selling and it has to be complementary to the Revive brand. But because I've built a brand on everybody welcome, I haven't found anyone that hasn't been complimentary. I invite them the last 2 weeks of the month, and I invite them to take a space in the store, put their marketing, put their hang tags on their product, I invite them to come in the store one day a week to see the customers interact with their clothes in a physical space, which they probably haven't experienced before, and show them, yeah, a different light of how it is in a physical space. And then on the second week, we always throw a party where there's usually a DJ and a few non-alcoholic and alcoholic beverages. Last time we had Tooth Gems stall. And the girl who was the vendor, she invited friends to DJ. And then we ended up staying open an extra hour, which is unheard of for me, but the vibes were high. And I said, 1 hour.
7 o'clock. I can do it.
Exactly. So I do look forward to that. I mean, summer's peak weather, peak vibes, peak selling month anyway. So yeah, lots of positive things in store.
When you think about Revive in say 3, 5, 10 years, how do you feel? Are you even looking that far ahead?
I just signed the lease for one more year because I really just want to stay reactive as much as possible. I don't feel like I'm done learning in order to build a longer-term strategy. I'm just still operating on short-term strategy, and to stay flexible as necessary. You know, what if I decide I want to move cities or locations, or I want to move, or it's not for me anymore? I'm still leaving room for humanity, like my humanity. Not that I'm not fully dialed in and believing or having faith in myself, but yeah, I'm a little bit older than you. What if my personal life decides to change or something happened? You know, I'm just hyper flexible at the moment. So not looking 10 years down the line. I can see like shapes of the 5 year, but 10 years is, yeah, too far.
And that is hard, because when you are the everything for the brand, in order to even think like, okay, if you had kids in the mix, okay, if you moved, in order to have someone else step into those roles, even for you to temporarily take a month off, couple months off, you got to be really certain about the brand vision in order to even convey that to an employee.
100%. And also, you have to trust someone. And also, you sometimes underestimate how much you are your brand, because even if I have hired freelancers to cover shifts, I could see the difference in sales versus with a freelancer versus when I'm in the store. And that could be a number of different reasons, but most of the time it comes down to the relationship or rapport that I've already built with the community or my repeat customers. So yeah, me leaving is one thing in terms of physically not being there, but you underestimate those relationships that you've built sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. And now I don't really work in the shop very much anymore, but I know that I have to pop in here and there just for like PR, basically. To be like, yes, I do still own the shop. I'm here. But I'm kind of, after this is 4 years now for me. So in order to give space to the other project buckets in my life, I had to recognize that I can't give 100% anymore. I've got a, you know, 20-20-20. And that took a lot of personal work in order to let go of it being exactly how I want it and me needing to do everything and thinking that the way I do it is the best way, because it's not. It's how I do it, and the way that other people want to do it is how they're interpreting it. And I don't want to be like a controlling boss. There's like a line of being diligent and keeping the brand image alive, and then at the other end is like being so controlling that people are like terrified to work for you.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to be in the middle.
Fine line. Correct. But I mean, it is like being a parent. No one's supposed to tell you how to parent. That's like an absolute no-no. But it, for a business, it's about drawing the line of control and letting go and acknowledging that someone can do an okay job. They're not going to do it how you would do it, but it's not going to sink, you know?
Yeah. And I'm a big believer in that if the employee is failing, then as the owner, I clearly didn't explain things well. At one of the places I used to work, the owner would always say, a business, the shit will stink from the top down, not the bottom up. Every problem goes back to the owner. You didn't have the right system. You didn't give the proper training. You didn't communicate, or you didn't find the right employee for the right role. And so I think as an owner, taking quite literally ownership in how you delegate requires, yeah, a lot of personal work to own the mistakes, even if you aren't directly the one to make them, that indirectly you weren't providing for your employee how you could have.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's about mentoring and nurturing. And every person is unique. It's about how much information you give them and how they absorbed it and then how it shows up in the work. 100% starts from the top down.
Well, I guess that leads us to wrapping up this conversation. We ask all of our guests that come on the Artie Friends podcast, to you, what makes a good friend?
To me, what makes a good friend is someone you can reach out to and that will be there to listen to you. They don't necessarily need to solve anything for you. It just needs to be someone who's there to say, I hear you, I got you. And it's enough to just be there and to listen.
Oh, I love that. Well, for everyone around the world, how can they support both you as a person and Revive as a business?
It's enough to just get talking about me. So if you can shoot out a few likes on Instagram and TikTok and maybe a few reposts and stories or whatnot, I won't ask for your money because it's not for everyone or yeah, but it's enough to just share the word. So I think Allison has shared all of my socials in the blog. So super.
Yep. They will be both on artiefriendspodcast.com. I make a little blog post for every episode that we have. So there will be fun photos of Revive. You can send me whatever you want. I'll add them on there. And then always in our show notes, doesn't matter what platform you're listening on, Apple, Spotify, Google, in the show notes, we will make sure to link all your stuff as well.
Amazing. Well, I hope to meet some of your listeners digitally. Always love to expand the Revive community.
If any listener goes in, which they will, I need to hear about this. Like, I need a selfie. We need a DM. I want to know about it.
Pics or it didn't happen.
Yes, truly, truly. Well, congratulations on one official year of Revive. I'm so proud of you and everything that you've created for yourself, for your immediate community, and as a role model to other people that want to get more into secondhand, want to open their own shop. You're doing great things, and I'm excited to see the next 1 or 9 years of Revive, or many more.
Thanks so much, Allison, and I appreciate you stumbling into my store last year and full circle. Circularity ending up here. Appreciate you.
Of course. I appreciate you too. Bye, guys. We'll catch you next week.
Later.
Okay, wait, really quick before you go, if you want a chance to be the Artie Friends Listener of the Week, we have something for you. Leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And for bonus entries, there's so many ways to support our show. Share about us on your Instagram story, engage with us over on TikTok, post on our Facebook group, join the Patreon page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Make sure to send that rating and review to our Instagram page, Artie Friends Podcast, and we pick a new Listener of the Week every Wednesday. We'll send you a $10 Visa gift card if you win, just as a way of saying thank you, to buy you a coffee, buy you a sweet little treat, whatever you want. Thanks again, you guys. We appreciate you so, so much, and we'll catch you next week.